Good morning, Your Honors. I thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Kim Everett. I'm here for Sally Hubbard, the plaintiff appellee in this case. This case involves an exculpatory clause contained within a contract that Mrs. Hubbard signed when she joined Valley Fitness in 1992. She was injured approximately 16 years after she signed this contract and joined the club. At issue in this case is whether the exculpatory agreement contained within the contract was ever provided to Mrs. Hubbard and if it was enforceable because it was never provided to Mrs. Hubbard. Under the Jones criteria in this, in order for there to be a valid exculpatory clause, you must have an existence of a duty. The nature of the service performed for the public must be evaluated. Whether the contract was fairly entered into, and the intention of the parties must be addressed. This case primarily revolves around factors 3 and 4, whether the contract was fairly entered into, and whether it correctly expresses the intent of the parties. Now, Mrs. Hubbard has never denied that she signed a contract to join Valley Fitness Club in 1992. What is at issue here is whether that contract contained the exculpatory clause, which was later used to dismiss her claims against Valley.
And was that issue presented to the trial court?
It was, yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
It was the primary purpose behind a motion for summary judgment that was filed. And this one, the big thing is this is the original contract that Mrs. Valley signed. Due to the time that she joined in 1992, between the time that she was injured, it was stored on microfiche, and as you can tell, very, very poor to read. And the defendant provided us with a clean copy that you can read that was never stored on microfiche and is very clear. The exculpatory clause in this contract comes on what is now page 2. And as you can see, the two pages are absolutely identical. There's no evidence of the second page having been stored on microfiche. Mrs. Hubbard has no recollection of having seen this contract, this portion of the contract.
Well, Ms. Everett, isn't there some evidence? Because you have an affidavit from the Valley representative that says it's a true and correct copy of what was signed.
We do have that affidavit, Your Honor. This page, however, when we look at the quality of the two pages, and then we couple it with Mrs. Hubbard's affidavit that she was never given this page, the quality of the contract that bears her signature that she has never denied signing is quite, you know, hard to read because of the age of the contract.
Does her affidavit say that she was never given that page?
It says she doesn't recall being given that
page.
That's
what I thought. So the fact really isn't in dispute.
Well, Your Honor, the deal here is we're looking at a 16-year gap, and she said she didn't recall being given this page. So that does leave open the possibility, which is why we went to the contract itself.
Except you have an affidavit from Valley Total Fitness that says that's the contract.
Your Honor, and we understand that, but what we're looking at is when we look at this contract, the unexecuted version that was provided that they said was stored in their files and not on microfiche, and their copy that they say was given to Mrs. Hubbard are virtually identical down to the copy mark.
Well, I guess, Ms. Everett, what I'm struggling with is that I appreciate and I understand your argument and speculation. But when we look at the record, we're constrained. Mm-hmm. We have to see whether or not the record supports what the trial court did. The record seems to indicate that there is no undisputed question about the contract. We have an affidavit with no counter affidavit. In fact, the closest Ms. Hubbard can come is to say she doesn't recall.
Correct, Your Honor. And in this case, there is a comment on page 1 that says, in small print at the bottom, this contract contains a waiver and release. Mrs. Hubbard does remember these two pages. She does not recall the other two. We're looking at a 16-year gap, and she was 60 years old when she signed into this contract initially. So we will concede there are some memory issues there, and to be honest, I don't know what I signed in 1992, and I'm significantly younger than Mrs. Hubbard. But the issue here is what our contention is when you look at the validity or the appearance of the contract, it creates a question of material fact as to whether these two pages had been included with the original contract. And our contention is that if there is a material fact relating to the contents of the contract, then that should have been properly decided before a jury because there remained a question of fact, making summary judgment inappropriate.
Ms. Everett, I have a more, excuse me, I have a more specific question, a version of Judge Scarparelli's question. Was the condition of the microfilm contract as a basis for assuming that the two pages weren't provided, was that argument made to the trial court?
It was, Your Honor.
And in which motion?
It was in our response to the motion for summary judgment. And Your
Honor, Ms. Everett, so let me elaborate on that. Yes, you know, let's be clear that we're here on summary judgment. The question is whether there was a genuine issue of fact. And the genuine issue of fact, it would seem to me, would be the contents of this agreement. From the trial court's order, the trial court says she attempts to create a factual dispute by claiming she did not see and was not shown the exculpatory clause contained in the paragraph. Now, even if she'd been presented all four pages, if she argues, well, I didn't see it, they didn't show it to me, that doesn't establish a genuine issue of material fact. The genuine issue would be, it seems to me, was it there?
Correct.
What, is this an authentic copy of the contract? Did you present that issue to the trial court? This is not an authentic copy of the contract.
I believe it was, Your Honor. I'll be honest, I was not at the trial court level on this case, but from having read the pleadings, I do recall seeing it in there. And that essentially is what this surrounds on. Because, you know, and I agree 100%, if someone is given a contract and they either don't look at the whole contract, they don't read the entire contract for whatever reason, they sign off on the bottom, they were given the opportunity to have read that clause and for whatever reason did not do so. Our contention in this case is that Mrs. Hubbard was never given that opportunity. It wasn't simply an oversight on her part that she did not read this clause. Because, you know, a failure to read the contract before you sign it is no excuse once you've entered the contract. At issue in this case is that Mrs. Hubbard has stated she was presented with a two-page contract, and it's the two pages that she was not presented with, one of which contains the exculpatory clause.
Ms. Everett, in the language you had referenced earlier about the waiver and release on the page that Ms. Hubbard did sign, mm-hmm. there is a specific reference to a paragraph 10, and isn't that some evidence that there was, in fact, a page that included a paragraph 10 that was included in the contract?
Your Honor, we've gone over this with Mrs. Hubbard, and essentially what she has said is, it says, includes a paragraph 10. She was given a front-to-back contract that looks something like this. And so she flips it over. She doesn't see a paragraph 10. She's not sure what to think. She's a 60-year-old woman joining a health club, and she signs the contract. This wasn't a case where she was presented with the other two pages and didn't go to them to read. What her affidavit stated is she was given a two-page contract, which was these two pages. The only waiver of liability in there is just this contract contains a waiver and release to which you know, in paragraph 10, to which you will be bound. That paragraph alone does not contain specific details as to what she's waiving and what she's releasing. We're trying to look at this, you know, as an attorney, I obviously would question that, and you know, but as a 60-year-old woman, without any advanced education, I'm not certain that anybody would question that. You're more aligned to say, well, there is no paragraph 10, so we must be good to go, and we'll sign it. Mrs. Hubbard's affidavit does state that she was given a two-page contract, which she signs, and she's always admitted that she's had this two-page contract. She had a copy for a while, but lost it or threw it away. I believe she testified she threw it away after a certain period of time after she joined. Again, we're looking at a 16-year membership before she was injured using the facility at which she joined. So that's really the big thing is when we look at the, and because of the time lapse, because of Mrs. Hubbard's age and memory related to the situation, and because of the conflicting, you know, they're certain they gave it to her, she's pretty certain she's never seen it before. We go to look at the condition of the contract. In the condition of the contract, it just does not seem that these pages could have been stored on the same 16-year-old microfiche that the other pages were, and yet still be in the pristine condition they are, when the other two pages, after having been stored on microfiche for that long, we had to be provided with clean copies because the copy of the contract is hard to read because of the age and the method in which it was stored and retrieved later.
Well, in your brief, you make reference to that by saying, interestingly enough, two pages signed by Mrs. Hubbard are very bad reproductions. All the other two pages, Valley 2 and 4, which contain the alleged exculpatory clause are clear, and you cite us to the record at pages 67 to 70. You do not suggest to us or cite to us the place in the record where you told the court that the condition of the pages indicates that it's not the original contract. Could you tell us where in the record?
Your Honor, I believe it was in our response to the motion for summary judgment. I don't have the exact record site in front of me.
Let me ask you this. Your first argument says, so there's a question of fact as to whether she knowingly waived liability. Where do you get this element of knowingly?
Your Honor, what we're looking at is if she was not presented with the clause when she signed that contract, she was unaware that she was signing an exculpatory agreement that waived liability on the part of Bally's for negligence.
So essentially, once again, that she was never presented with this clause.
Correct, Your Honor. So if she wasn't presented with it, she couldn't knowingly waive any of the conditions that were in that contract. Or knowingly assent to it.
I mean, you'd accept that if the contract was there, all four pages, and she didn't read it, she might not know what she was signing, but she'd be bound by it.
Correct, Your Honor. The question here is that she is confident she was presented with a two-page contract, not a four-page contract. Your Honor, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Certainly.
Matthew Biskin, 15701 for the defendant. The simple fact of the matter is, Your Honors, that the affidavit the plaintiff relies on for the argument that she did not receive two pages of the contract says absolutely nothing of the kind. There is no evidence in the record, either put before the trial court or referred to in the appellate briefing, where plaintiff contended that she did not receive the entirety of this contract. The only place that is raised is in the argument of counsel. Nowhere in the affidavit does Ms. Hubbard say she only received a two-page contract. It simply doesn't say that. The issue here, and again, in the reply brief and in argument today, plaintiff has conceded that the exculpatory clause is valid and binding. The only issue before this court, then, is the question of what is in the record regarding the existence of the contract. And I put it to you that the only evidence is the affidavit of John Sennett, Ms. Hubbard's admission that she signed it, received it, read it, understood it, and threw it away, as exemplified by her affidavit and her deposition testimony, and that the entirety of the argument that this microfiche is somehow suspect is a construct of argument. Nowhere and at no time did plaintiff present any evidence to contradict Mr. Sennett's affidavit.
Mr. Biskin, do you agree with Ms. Everett's memory of the record that the condition of the contract, the microfiche condition, was raised to the trial court in that response?
The trial court made reference in its finding to the plaintiff's argument, objecting to the authenticity of the contract. But before the trial court, there was no evidence of any expert witness on the quality or the reasoning behind the photocopying or the microfilm. There was no testimony admitted from Ms. Hubbard that she only received two pages of the contract. Despite the argument of counsel, despite having raised a 901 issue with the trial court, that was done without any evidence. And the trial court disposed of it as such properly. I would put it to you that a review of the record reflects that only evidence before the court was that of a four-page contract received and signed by Ms. Hubbard. Given the fact that to create a material issue in dispute on summary judgment, the evidence must be admissible and competent and not mere argument, the trial court's decision was precisely correct. And a review de novo of its decision should affirm. Be happy to take any questions.
If there's a question regarding authenticity, I mean, as best as I'm understanding the plaintiff's, the appellant's argument, it is that the document that has been presented to the court is not an authentic copy of the contract that Ms. Hubbard signed. Your argument with regard to that, I guess where I'm getting is, so is there a question as to whether it's authentic? Was that question presented to the trial court?
The question was presented obliquely in argument, not with any evidence. The court disposed it, and properly so. Reference to 901 and authenticity is in the court's order.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Everett? Ms. Everett, I want to take you back to the court's order, because here is where I get stuck. The court's order says that Ms. Hubbard claimed she did not see and was not shown the exculpatory clause. And the way that I read that is not to say that it wasn't there, but rather I didn't see that it was there, and they had some duty to point it out to me or to show it to me. But I don't interpret that phrasing to say this, I didn't get four pages. Was that issue presented, was there evidence presented to the trial court that Ms. Hubbard did not get four pages?
I believe the affidavit was what was used, and I agree it could have been worded better, because the intention after speaking with Mrs. Hubbard was, and we'd spoken with her about it before, and this was the way we'd presented the argument to the trial court, and pointing out the discrepancy between the copies of the contract presented to us, that we did raise the validity of that. Mrs. Hubbard had stated she did remember a two-page contract. She did not remember a four-page contract. And when we couple that with the quality of the contract that was presented to us after having been retrieved from, I believe it was 18-year-old microfiche at the time of the suit, it seemed to us that that's very plausible, because those two pages do not appear to have come from the same page as the other remaining two pages of the contract. Incidentally, the pages with the exculpatory clause also contain no markings whatsoever. This was raised at the trial court also. No signature lines, no initial blanks next to any of the things. There's no markings on there at all indicating that they, you know, where the patron has to sign those pages. The signatures all remain on the other two pages, which are of very poor quality. And these two pages are identical to the two pages that were presented as the clean copy provided for legibility purposes.
Now, does authenticity present a question of fact for the jury? I mean, if the evidence is presented to the trial court and the trial court says, my ruling is that this is sufficiently authentic, this document is going to the jury, so then the authenticity of the document's been decided by the trial court, what's the question then for the jury?
Your Honor, our question is the material fact dispute came in that Mrs. Hubbard stated she was given two pages of a contract, and when you look at the contract, it supports for her contention that two of these pages were not 18 years old at the time they were provided to us.
The affidavit that she submitted says, when I signed the contract, I did not see and was not shown the exculpatory clause contained in paragraph 10. Further, no waiver of liability was ever shown to me or explained to me, nor do I recall it being part of the original agreement. I do not recall any other pages which defendant claims were part of the contract. And indeed, the trial court clearly relied upon that affidavit in issuing its order, because it said that Hubbard admits the signature for the contract, admits that the signature on the contract is hers. However, she attempts to create a factual dispute by claiming that, quote, she did not see and was not shown the exculpatory clause contained in paragraph 10. I'm struggling to see what the dispute is.
Your Honor, in that same affidavit, she says she does not recall the other two pages being a part of the contract. And those two pages that she's referencing are pages 2 and 4, the clean copies, which have the exculpatory clause with it.
But the trial court received an affidavit from Valley, which was not refuted, that said, this is the contract.
Your Honor, we refuted that with Mrs. Hubbard's affidavit, stating that she does not recall those two pages being a part of the original contract, and then relied on the condition of the contract to show that, to support her statement that those two pages were not included.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The case is now submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.